So you've heard of the Challenger Sale, our best-selling book that gives B2B sellers a competitive advantage. Maybe you've even read it a few times. Or maybe you're a sales leader who purchased a copy of the book for everyone on your team and asked them to read it and adopt its principles. And of course, you have this podcast to help you and your team take your Challenger skills to the next level. But are books and podcasts really enough to help you create meaningful, lasting improvement in your sales performance? Probably not. The good news is there's a company that helps you do just that. Challenger Inc. has a decade of experience helping organizations implement the Challenger approach through training, coaching, consulting, and technology. We've helped hundreds of B2B sales organizations of all shapes and sizes around the globe improve top-line growth by winning more deals. Check us out at www.challengerinc.com today to learn more about how to get started on your Challenger transformation. Welcome to Winning the Challenger Sale, a podcast where we take you beyond the groundbreaking book that transformed the world of sales and share practical advice on how to show up like a challenger in your customer conversations. I'm your host, Jen Allen. Our goal here is simple: equip you and your teams to win more deals by harnessing your inner challenger. This is part of Challenger Inc.'s suite of products designed to give you everything you need to go from idea to action to meeting and exceeding your sales goals. Now let's get started. Welcome back to this week's episode of Winning the Challenger Sale. I'm your host, Jen Allen, and our theme for November is preparing for negotiations. Now specifically, we're exploring how star sellers prepare negotiables and anticipate curveballs ahead of negotiation conversations. Today, I am so thrilled to welcome our very special guest, Caroline Francia. Caroline, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited. Thank you, Jen.
I'm so excited to have you here today. We're going to have a lot of fun. For those of you that don't know Caroline, Caroline's the founder of Uppercut First. This is a company that helps European startups develop a competitive advantage in their go-to-market and scale-up plan. Now, Caroline has a rich history in both frontline sales and account management, as well as years of experience leading sales teams. She's also certified in the MEDDIC framework. But Caroline caught my eye after I saw an article that she authored, which was called Negotiate Like the Best Pirate of All Times. And that's exactly why I'm excited to have her on. So, Caroline, let's help our listeners get to know you a bit. Can you tell us a little bit about your origin story into the world of sales and how you got to where you are today?
Right. I mean, this was like first job out of school, right? Didn't really think about it. Probably like the SDRs of today. It's like, okay, tech back then was not as trendy as it is today, but still it was a good pay. And from then I just made a career out of it, I guess. I started a computer associate and then all American companies up to founding Uppercut First 2 years ago.
Love it. Love it. So we're going to dig into some of that experience, but let's get right into the topic at hand. I'm going to start with a fun question. What is one piece of conventional wisdom about negotiations that you personally disagree with?
Right. I don't know if it's conventional wisdom, but I think a lot of people are seeing negotiation as something that is scaring them, that is something that they drag, that they don't want to go into. And a lot of sellers feel that they're the little man into the negotiation. Well, I believe it should be super playful, fun, and it's a game of chess for which you've, you know, placed your pawns a long time ago and you know exactly how it's going to play out.
I love that, sort of the David Goliath situation where we feel like we're the small man who has to defeat the big ugly monster, right? I think that mindset. That mindset can harm us when we walk into these. So I love that take. Now, let's get to the article that caught my eye, which, as I said, was called Negotiate Like the Best Pirate of All Times. We'll link it in the show notes so all of you can take a look, too. So talk to us about this story. Like, what do you think sellers today can learn from Jack Sparrow as they approach negotiation conversations?
I think it goes back to, you know, how you view negotiation, right? What Jack Sparrow has is the sense of artful, witty way of getting out of any situation. But really, it's all planned. He has a plan all the time, right? It just doesn't show it. And I think that's that's something that we talk a lot in sales. Do you have the art? Do you have the science? Do you have the soft skills? Do you have the methodologies? What I'm thinking is that once you know what methodologies can get you out of any situation, it's really just like your soft skill and adaptability that will make the show. And Jack Sparrow always makes a show.
That is for sure. You spoke about the importance of starting a negotiation with your best case scenario. And I particularly liked this. So I want to break that down into two pieces. One is, why do you think more sellers do not start with their best case scenario? Why do they start with worst case scenario? And two, why is it important that a seller start with their best case scenario?
So don't want to make a general statement here because not all sellers do that. But when it comes to negotiation, it's a moment where this deal is almost like forecasted, sometimes in a commit, and people are freaking out of losing it. That is often a situation, especially as we're in Q4 for a lot of companies right now. And like, this is the moment you make your year or not, or you go over quota. Some people don't have backup plans. They don't have backup deals. So they don't want to take the option of losing it. And that's, again, that's the mindset in which you enter the negotiation. So by fear of potentially losing that deal, they're going with whatever they think the customer is going to agree to. Now, the problem is negotiation is a game, right? So as much as you've developed, and I'm sorry if I'm using some medic statements here, but
no, it's okay.
You know, the champions, you have your strong champions rooting for you, going to get the budget lined up and get legal to sign and everything. There's always going to be some sort of like legal negotiation or procurement negotiation, payment terms. Like negotiation is not always pricing, right? And so no matter how much you've done, like, during the sales campaign, how much you've given, this is the moment where you need to keep something to negotiate with, because you're not going to talk with your champions. You're going to talk to other people that needs convincing. So going in with your best case scenario, well, the best case that can happen is, like, I would even say, like, go with your like above best case scenario, but then some people are going to freak out. So, but going with your best case scenario is super important because it gives you some options to negotiate down to an acceptable win-win. Now, sometimes the best case scenario is completely acceptable by the client because the value is there, right? It's all about if they understood well enough the problem that you're solving for them and the impact to their business.
So there's so much about what you said that I love, but I want to hit on a theme that I think is very, very real for sellers. I mean, we're recording this October 2022. This will come out November 2022. I don't anticipate that the economy is going to correct itself in a month. So the reality is many of us who are sellers are looking at a pipeline that keeps getting smaller and smaller. And so you spoke about the mindset that we bring to a negotiation, and often why we lead with worst case scenario is our fear of losing something, right? There's a word that I learned. We covered this in our very first episode of this show back before I was even on it. I'm going to probably butcher the pronunciation of this. It's a German term. It's called tortious panic, I think is how you pronounce it. But the term means it's like that feeling when we're at the airport and we're rushing to get to our gate and we feel like we're going to miss our gate and we start to abandon logic and common sense, right? Because we're fear of losing, fear of missing. And I think if I reflect back on Q4s where I was behind my goal and I was walking into negotiations, what you described is exactly how I felt. I'm going to lose something if I don't make this as attractive as possible. But I think I've had some really good managers that have taught me, like, you actually don't have anything yet, Jen. There's nothing to lose. You have no deal. You have an opportunity, and it is just that. It is an opportunity. So I love your advice. I think, you know, there's a central theme through a lot of what I'm hearing from you, which is mindset. Mindset really, really matters.
I'd say it's 80% of the game, right? because this, you mentioned energy, and I'm a strong believer in everything. Energy is like, it's like, you know, do I go back to the dog?
We were talking about Muggsy, who many of you listening know.
A dog can feel the fear, right? And that's not because they have special power. It's they feel the energy. But we as human can feel that energy. So if procurement feels like you're scared to death, they're going to keep pushing and pushing and pushing. And if your manager is scared, and if your VP is scared, and if your CEO is scared and willing to give everything to get the deal in, they're going to keep pushing to the worst and the worst case. This is where the company's at risk, because where do you make benefits? Where do you invest in R&D? Where do you make sure that you don't churn? Because you need customer success. You need to pay customer success to make sure that deal is successful. But if they don't pay at the right price, at the right value, then something's off, right?
Absolutely. My gosh, I'm loving you more and more. You managed to work in dogs into this conversation, which, you know, you've just stolen my heart. So let's talk about preparation, right? So you hinted before at the idea that it's not just discounts. Negotiation are not just price-driven conversations. So when you've led sales teams, what are two things you've coached your sellers to do in order to prepare for that negotiation call, so they're not just simply looking at discounting price?
Right. So I'm going to go back to, was it last, it's just last month that you were talking about sequence of events and close plan, right? To me, a lot of the things that fall into a close plan should actually be part of the beginning. So as soon as you have somebody who has a problem that needs fixing, and I know that I'm going to use another word that you love a lot, is cost of action, right? And cost of not acting. And that person really feel that there's a big cost of not acting, then you entering into a sales campaign. This is where it's entering the CRM, right? But this is the moment where you're going to lay this out for them. It's like, okay, I've done this for a number of times, and this is typically how things are going to play out. We need to engage your procurement early. We need to engage your legal early. We need to engage your security early. Because if we don't do this, you're going to be blocked at the most important moment for you, because the budget is not going to be an issue. You know that there's a cost of not fixing the problem, not doing something. But all of these guys, they're going to delay the action. So your management's going to get it, but then you're going to struggle with these guys. The sooner we involve them and we give them an important role into this play, the smoother it's going to be. So I think the biggest advice is to do not think that, like, I really don't like this sales process where you have like the discovery, because for me, the discovery goes until the end. And, you know, like if you look at the CRM, discovery is like from 0 to 30% or 0 to 20%. It's like, no, you never stop being curious. You never stop doing the discovery. It should be all the way. And then negotiation comes at 80% when you've already told that this is forecasted, but you have no clue that it's going to go through with legal, procurement, and security. And that should be at the beginning. So that would be the number one essential advice I'd give.
I love it. I love discovery all throughout, right? You never stop being curious. There's discovery as part of negotiations, to your point. And to that end, let's talk about power. We use a term called powerful questions, which are simply, in Challenger lingo, questions that aren't like yes, no answers, that elicit something from a customer that helps you learn, helps them learn about themselves. So I think one of the things that freaks many sellers out, it certainly freaked me out when I first started selling, was the beginning of that negotiation conversation, right? We all know why we're here. It's tense. It's a little stressful. So what are some examples of questions that you are asking in the beginning of a negotiation conversation?
So typically that goes back to getting to know these people early. It's like, what are your non-negotiators? Like, what are the things that you need to go through? I remember one time at BMC, it was end of fiscal years, end of Q4, and I had this kind of bluebird deal coming in, so no time to do the proper discovery. And this procurement lady says, yeah, if you want this to go through, we're going to have to do this and this and that. And I'm like, I have no negotiate. And I was just like, okay, I'm a salesperson. You're a procurement person. We both have bonuses somewhere. I was like, what is important to you? Because I'm not going to be able to accept everything. And you know this. So tell me what's important for you to make your year. What is important for your bonus? And I'm going to try to do all I can to go that way, that route. That is because I was peer to peer, right? If you talk to leadership, this is going to be a bit different. I did mention something in the article that sometimes you completely freak out because you think the deal's on track, is about to sign, and then there's a like last minute requirement and you're like, no, why are they doing me? And I see this as a blessing because sometimes these requirements, they come from a leadership looking into the deal, like a CFO or something, who's like, okay, we actually need, you know, this could be like a legal thing where they want to cover all subsidiaries. And you're like, wait a minute, because they're actually planning to buy like an external company and they want it to be covered. And you're like, wait a minute. All current subsidiaries are covered, but why would you want future subsidiaries? Because that's not fair to us. And then you enter an actual discussion for additional licenses, and that comes directly from the CFO. So there's never something that comes like, you know, last minute without a purpose, and especially if it comes like in a large deal, which is what we're talking about, right? Any deals that is multiple six figures and seven figures and more. There is always something to be uncovered.
I am obsessed with that answer because I think we all know we're supposed to ask why. We know it. We hear it all the time. We've heard start with why, right? But going back to what you shared earlier, it is that feeling of panic at the end where we sometimes fall down on bad behavior when we know better. And I think that example is such a phenomenal example because if we just rush to answer the question, meaning if we just say, let me go check with legal to see if we can change that without doing what you suggested, which is first stop and ask, why is this important to you? We miss a potential huge upside. I think that is one of the better examples I've heard on this podcast of real time why you have to start with why. So love that story.
I call it the magic wand word.
Yes, right? It's like one of those words you should just post-it note on your computer.
Yeah,
like,
question, why?
It's that like fifth graders or five-year-old mindset. I'm learning that now as a new stepmom. I'm like, there's power in doing this. There's absolute power. Okay, so one more question before we wrap up with our normal last two questions. So you're obviously very, very well versed in Medic, which many of our listeners are also familiar with. I want to pick your brain a little bit. We get questions a lot around like, are Medic and Challenger opposing views? Do they work together? Are they the same thing? Like, I would love from your perspective, because you've got great visibility into both, what is your take on Medic and Challenger? Do they work together? Are they two, you know, sides of the same coin? To help us understand from your point of view.
All right. So I wasn't actually paid to answer this. This is very important. It's not a podcast. But I actually believe that you can't do Medic without being a Challenger sale, right? And that goes back to who are the successful salespeople? And what do Challenger do? Well, they consistently push the discovery. They consistently have these two-sided questions, customer power questions, customer thinking, oh, wait a minute, I need to think about this. Consistently give a visionary view. And this goes, you can't do Medic without having nailed I and C of Medic, which is implicate. I know some people say identify, I say implicate. Implicate meaning the customer has to share this with you. And that is, you have to be the enabler. You have to be the challenger. They don't think they have a problem. You're taking them to feel that problem, to express that problem, to implicate what that problem means, right? That's the I. And then by being this person, you're more than the relationship builder. You're the person who are really connecting into value and you building champions. So that's the I and C of Medic. And there's a lot more to be said between what Challenger can do for Medic, but Medic is a framework where you basically make an analysis of the gaps that you have in an opportunity and in your relationship with your client to better forecast and prevent churn. But how you're getting this insight is your own way, right? And I strongly believe that nowadays, startups and scale-ups have to be even more the challenger, because some of these guys out there, they don't even know they have the problem.
Amen. That's probably the best answer to that question I have ever heard, including my own answer to that question. So thank you for giving such a thoughtful, thoughtful answer. Like writing notes so I can repeat that. Awesome. So let's wrap up with a couple last questions. This is a fun one we ask all of our guests. So the question is this: if you could take anyone in sales out to lunch, living, dead, sales is however you define it, who would it be and why?
All right. I don't know if I can qualify this person as in sales, because he's for me the Jimi Hendrix of sales, John McMahon. I would love to have lunch with John.
Okay. And tell us why.
Just completely inspired by what he did. I mean, I joined BMC right after he left, and what he built with the Y Card and bringing the Blade Logic team and building a complete medic company, but not medic in the sense of, okay, let's do micro reporting, but really enable people to think and go beyond and become this amazing excellence machine of sales. But that is not just sales, it's complete revenue. So revenue architecture from, you know, insights and SDRs to AEs to AMs to CSM all across the board. And then he was in the board at Sprinklr. I just never had the opportunity. I'm dreaming of having a bar with him. but I'm not doing QBRs anymore. But yeah, that's like, I love his book. I thought it was witty and funny. So I guess it was just like having a fun moment like we are having right now. Would be great. Yeah.
I love it. Well, you'll have to send this episode to him. One of these days, one of these matchmaking is going to happen and there's going to be a lunch. So fingers crossed, it's you. Okay. Now, lastly, I am sure after all of the thoughtful things that you've shared, the great advice, the great tactics, there's a lot of listeners who are going to want to continue learning from you. So where can our listeners find you and learn more about what you're doing now?
All right. Well, LinkedIn is definitely the place. I'm not as, writing as much as I should, but I'm trying to write a lot. The article that you mentioned is now a chapter in the book Popcorn for the New CEO. I know it's a for the new CEO, but it really covers a lot of sales stuff. And then if anybody wants to kick my butt, I need to finish Popcorn for the New CEO too. So I really need a coach. The book. But yeah, LinkedIn is the best place to hang out.
Wonderful. Well, I cannot speak highly enough about Caroline. I enjoy your content. I enjoy that it's both thoughtful. It's fun to read. Selling does not have to be boring and dull. And I just appreciate you so much for dedicating your time with us today. It's been a serious joy to have you on. So thank you so much for being with us. Listeners, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review Winning the Challenger Sale on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you so much for listening. And we will see you next week.
Thanks, as always, for joining us here on Winning the Challenger Sale. For the tools and resources you need to close more deals, head over to ChallengerInc.com.